So, Oliver, who are we canceling today?
Obviously, Netflix again. No other options.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good move. And also, there have been a lot of developments in the story since we talked about it last time.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to our guests about that.
Hey, everyone. I'm Caitlin Burns.
And I'm Oliver Ash Klein.
And you're listening to Cancel Me, Daddy.
The show where we take a closer look at all of the panic around cancel culture.
With thoughtful analysis.
And verbal shitposting. So, Caitlin, what's new and exciting with you?
I'll tell you what. There's been an exciting development in my life.
Do tell.
I bought an old lady cart for the grocery store.
I love that. I have had an old lady cart for several years, and they're so great.
Yeah, I mean, I live like a mile from the grocery store that I like to go to, and I was just tired of, you know, carrying six bags of groceries back.
You were carrying six bags of groceries back?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, you needed an old lady cart. That's a very good investment in your well-being.
I'm so excited. This is life-changing.
If you are lugging six bags of groceries all over the place, please buy yourself an old lady grocery cart because they're great, y'all. But yeah, we're not being paid for by like big old lady cart money.
But if you work for Big Old Lady Cart, my number is... No, I'm just kidding.
Sponsor this podcast. Before we get to the show, we, of course, are going to have some shameless self-promotion, as we do. I have been loving all of the listener comments that we have been getting about our last episode. Like, we've gotten so many tweets, so much love. It's been really, really great.
And welcome to new listeners, by the way. I know that our Twitter presence has been growing, so I appreciate the follows and the new listens. And welcome, and apologies in advance.
Apologies in advance for what? Our show is great. What are you apologizing for?
Yes.
You know, for new listeners, every week on the show, we read an Apple podcast review or a nice tweet about our show. And so if you want us to say your words on the air, that's one way you can do that. This week, I want to read a tweet from Lee Rosenbaum, which I really appreciated. It said, everyone should be listening to Cancel Me, Daddy, because their takes on the cancel culture grift economy are so real and become realer every day. Something, something Atwood. And yeah, unfortunately, you know, that tweet gets at the stuff that we're covering is somehow it's gotten to be a bigger conversation and a louder conversation and a more important conversation to have because, I don't know, it's just these last 6 months have been wild.
I feel like we were on the sort of front edge of this too, of people sort of realizing what the grift is. And what the thing they're referencing here in the tweet, something, something Atwood, is Margaret Atwood.
Whoa.
Kind of being weird about gender issues and like being turfy and then not being turfy. But anyway, she has like a book of short stories or something coming out in March. So people are speculating that this is all just part of a publicity drive, which is kind of what J.K. Rowling did.
The cancel culture grift economy at work.
Which is kind of what a bunch of other people have done. Anyway, so didn't want to leave that one hanging without explaining.
Yeah, and we have a really good show for you today. Caitlin, do you want to just let our listeners know what's coming in the next hour?
Yeah, so we're talking to Bea Pagels-Minor and Tara Field from Netflix. You'll know them as Tara was the senior software engineer at Netflix who's trans, who was originally suspended and then had her suspension lifted. And Bea is the pregnant Black trans person who Netflix fired in all of this. I am super happy that we had this conversation. It's very lengthy. I think this is probably the most time and space that they've had to articulate their feelings and thoughts on this. And I thought it was important for us to go back to this. I know this is the second episode in a row that we've spent on this, but there were a ton of developments after we recorded our last show. Like, B had not been fired at that point. The walkout had not occurred. So we felt it was important to go back and sort of fill in the gaps in the story from our first episode on this. But also, you know, one of the things that Oliver and I have sought to do with this show is give voice to those who we feel are being excluded from the conversation that's typical of cancel culture. And one of the things that I'm super happy about with this episode is that I think we did that for really the first time with a lot of substance. So I hope that you all enjoy the conversation that we had as much as we had having that conversation.
Today on Cancel Me Daddy, we are so fortunate to be joined by the organizer of the Netflix walkout, B. Pagels Minor. They were actually recently fired from their position as program manager shortly after the walkout was announced. Now, in my opinion, it's perhaps one of Netflix's most egregious move in the company's mishandling of this entire situation. B also worked as co-leader of the Trans at Netflix employee resource group that's called TransStar, and they also worked as co-leader of the Black at Netflix employee resource group. B, thank you so much for joining us today. I can't imagine all that you're going through right now, and it means a lot that you're coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that walkout B organized had about 2,000 employees attend, which is 20% of the company. Now, also with us here today is Tara Field. She is a senior software engineer at Netflix. When the Dave Chappelle special first came out, she had a thread that went viral on Twitter, talking about the harm of such hateful content. She's also a part of TransStar at Netflix as the co-vice president and was suspended from the company in the turmoil around all of this. Thank you for joining us today, Tara.
Thank you for having me.
Bea, I wanted to start out by asking you about your decision to kind of come out and name yourself, because I know initially you were staying anonymous because of concerns about online media attention and hate, and wanted to check in with you to see kind of what made you decide to come forward and also how that experience has been.
Yeah, so actually what's really interesting about this is I feel like I didn't have a choice. Right after the statement was put out to the news and some other places, my wife and I both noticed that there was an uptick in views to my website. There was an uptick in terms of, you know, these messages I was getting. So it actually seems like someone leaked my name, and we were actually able to find my name in a couple of different online forums. And, you know, I kind of had the suspicion that, you know, perhaps someone from within Netflix decided to do that. And I was just like, you know, if they're going to do that anyway, then I might as well ensure that my story is told the right way, because it's my right to write my story versus someone else specifically intimating things that were not true.
What do you want just the average everyday people to sort of take away from? I mean, I don't want to recap everything that's happened in the last week, but what would you want, like, just, you know, our listeners to take away from this whole experience?
Yeah, what I would say is that first and foremost, it's the right thing to fight. It's just the right thing to fight. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, they've misconstrued this from the very beginning that this is about the special, but it's not about the special. You know, the internal TransStar ERG had been talking to content leadership and leaders all over the company for the past 3 years about content and how much of the content that we were putting out on Netflix could be considered harmful or had the wrong types of information and was dangerous to trans people everywhere. And so the ask has been from the very beginning, you know, just have parity in content, put out content that is actually true, you know, make sure that people see that we live. You know, I said at the walkout, very specifically, you know, as someone who's about to have my first child, the thing that I keep coming back to is that I do not want my son to see images of people like me and wonder, Baba, why do people hate you? That's a terrifying conversation to think about having when it's really absolutely unnecessary if we could just have parity in the type of content that is actually out there in the world.
You saying that has brought up a lot of memories of conversations that I've had with my own kids. My oldest has started to read Harry Potter books, and that has led to several, I would say, interesting conversations about just these same types of things, right? Because obviously the J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter series, I think is in a very similar boat as like a Dave Chappelle, although I would argue that J.K. Rowling has taken it probably further than Dave Chappelle has. But just talking about transphobia in general and why people just don't like trans people. And it's, I certainly sympathize with you on that front.
Yeah. You know, and as a person who was a very proud Harry Potter fan, and I'm also a Slytherin, I've learned to accept that I'm a Slytherin. I don't get upset about that anymore. It broke my heart too about J.K. Rowling. And you know, it's so interesting because when you actually, like when I dive deeper into her comments, there's so much hurt that that woman has. And I hope that she addresses that hurt one day so that she can kind of move on and be the person that I think she could potentially be as well.
Ironically enough, a lot of the hurt that she has is the hurt that is also experienced very commonly by trans people.
Exactly.
And it breaks my heart that neither she nor any other person outside the trans community can seem to recognize that.
Yes, exactly. And it goes back to that point of like, how do we listen to each other? Like, how do we take a step back? We don't have any preconceived notions. We just listen to each other. We care about what's coming out of people's minds, and we try to help people be whole people. You know, if you really think about it, there are millions or even billions of people every single day who are walking through this world who've had so much hurt and harm done to them that they're like this, they live this like half life, right? And so it all is about how do we repair that damage and make people whole people so they can be the best versions of themselves. When I think about the content that Netflix is putting out, when I think about these hateful comments that are going out, it's like they're just diminishing people's ability to be these whole versions of themselves so that they can actually go out and be people who are super productive in society. And we are all diminished by that.
Tara, I was reading what you wrote. Is that, sorry, side note, is that on your blog? Is that where I read it? Right, Medium. Okay, thank you. Sorry, I... Okay, fine, that's okay. I just want to make sure I got that right, because I read it, and then like 30 seconds ago, I realized, oh, I didn't know like where I read it. So I read Bea's Washington Post piece also, and I'll get to that a little bit later, but... Tara, I read your piece on Medium that was titled, was it titled, It's Not About Dave?
It Was Never About Dave.
It Was Never About Dave. It was titled, It Was Never About Dave. And I found that really interesting because you talk about how the Trans Employee Resource Group, or ERG, has been having conversations now for years about trans inclusion and the company's support and portrayal of trans communities. Can you talk a little bit about the history there? And B, feel free to jump in too on this, because I know that you were part of that as well.
The ERG was formed a couple years before I actually joined the company. I joined the company in February of 2019. And it was formed kind of specifically because while there was a more generic, you know, LGBT ERG, the trans people at the company at that point, and there weren't very many, I think there might have been like two or three when the ERG started that were out at the company, they had some very specific asks regarding, at that point, primarily like workplace issues, right? So, hey, it's really hard for me to change my name. Hey, the language used in the signage isn't very inclusive. Hey, how do I get my, you know, proper name to show up on, you know, all of our systems without having to, you know, dead name myself and be dead named by the system over and over again. Initially, they were very like practical workplace concerns. And then, and again, this was before I was there, but then Girl came out on the service. And that was, I think that was probably the first point where the ERG really started pushing back and giving feedback on content. Because Girl, if you remember, is, it was I want to say transphobic, but really just, like, I don't think that was the intention there. It was just like it was so not grounded in our experience that it became almost like a caricature of our experience. And so people were very upset about that. And, you know, that is kind of what started having the content conversations. But again, at that point, the ERG was really small. You know, fast forward a few years, I think when I joined, we over doubled it to eight people. and then, you know, sticks and stones happened. And I think that was when we really, there were a couple of things about that moment that I think really changed things for us. One was because it was the feedback that we were offering was on something by a Black comedian. We didn't want to be, because at that point, you know, the ERG was mostly white trans women. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't want to be, you know, we didn't even want the appearance of criticizing a Black performer without having worked with our allies in the Black at ERG at Netflix. And so we came together with them and we had, like, you know, listening sessions with each other. We had town halls about it. And when it comes to the allyship with the other ERGs, it was really a fantastic moment for us. At that point, we also had conversations with leadership and the messaging that we got. You know, it was very much the same thing we've seen. It was, you know, talk about creative freedom and artistic freedom, and, you know, a lot of talk about some content is going to offend people. You know, I was frustrated at that point, so I wrote a memo that I called "Offense versus Impact," that essentially was a, you know, proto version of that Twitter thread that I did. That was an attempt by me internally to point out that, like, none of us are offended. Like, we're not thin-skinned. Like, you don't get to be a trans person who is both alive and as old as we are and have thin skin. That's just not how it works. It wasn't about offense. And so I tried to, you know, impress upon people that it's about the impact that it had to the community. And so at that point, that's when we really started having conversations and building relationships with content groups kind of in earnest. And also, that's right around the time that thankfully B arrived.
Yeah, maybe I could pick up from there. So I started in March 2020 and I started, you know, very, you know, gently getting involved in Black at and TransStar. But the one of the first memories I have at Netflix is being a part of the conversation follow up about Sticks and Stones. And that happened in June 2020. And in fact, it was myself and one other Black trans individual. We both were the two, like the two newbies to this group. And they were so gracious to let us join in these conversations with content leaders. And I remember being in that room and it was Ted Sarandos, Bella, and Cindy Holland. And it was so interesting because the conversation was really, it was completely not combative. It was, let us tell you about us. Let us tell you about what our lives look like and why it's so important that Netflix gets this content right. And, you know, there were like five or six of us and we kind of told them our stories and they sat and listened. And I remember especially Cindy Holland. Oh my gosh, Cindy Holland, queen, you know, amazing human. And she was just like, you know, we really hear you. And I actually think that one of the things that has hurt Netflix in this journey is that Cindy Holland is no longer there, right? You know, she ultimately ended up leaving the company. And as a result, you don't have that LGBTQ plus voice in a very high up leadership role at Netflix in content anymore. And I think that's one of the big issues that happened there, because it was very apparent that she seemed to understand more so than anyone else who was listening that day exactly what we were talking about. And so after that is also when I sought out leadership roles in TransStar. So TransStar became more formal because the goal was to actually ensure that we move forward these initiatives. And so that was the first time we had our formal elections, and I was elected to the global co-lead for TransStar as well as the content lead for TransStar, and Tara was elected as the VP for TransStar. And in my role as the content lead, what I really did was, you know, partner with some of our VP allies to start this thing I called the Friendship Offensive. And the whole goal was to meet with all of the various content leaders who would meet with us to just have very simple coffee chats, talk to them a little bit about ourselves, make sure they understand how, you know, we didn't want to harm or minimize the type of content that they were putting out. Creative freedom was important to us. Netflix values were important to us. Netflix's bottom line was important to us, right? Like, at no point did we want to do anything that would minimize the strategy that was already there. All we wanted to do was expand that strategy to tell more diverse stories. Because to Tara's point, it wasn't, you know, trans content obviously is a huge thing for us, but you also start to recognize there's not that great Black content. There's not that great Latinx content. There's not that great content about women who are in power, kicking ass, taking names on the network. In some ways, Netflix is following the exact same playbook that Hollywood's been playing for, you know, the past 100 years. And the goal was always just to make them more ambitious, to set them up for that next generation of viewer who has different expectations of what content looks like. And the Friendship Offensive was going well. In fact, you know, I'm going to bring this up because I get very annoyed about it every single time. But the Alok Menon event was a partnership between Netflix Animation and TransStar. You know, we had started planning that event months in advance of this whole controversy. And the goal was to bring Alok on. You know, from a TransStar perspective, I wanted to bring Alok in because that was a gift to the ERG. They love Alok. I love Alok. And then the Netflix Animation team is working on a bunch of projects over the next couple years that have gender diverse people in them. And so they wanted to give their team an opportunity to learn more about gender diverse communities as well. And so, you know, the Alok thing being tied up into all of this was really tragic because it wasn't. It was a gift to the trans community. And then it was a gift that was taken away from us because Alok started getting threats about, you know, why would you go there? Like all this other type of stuff. And it wasn't at all involved there. But all of this to say that there was movement happening on trying to achieve this overall goal of creating more diverse content, specifically trans content, on the service. However, that all got set back when the special came out because it seemingly seemed like the entire content organization had ignored all of that work and all of that relationship building for, you know, short-term goals.
I wanted to ask about having gone through that process, you know, with the employee resource group and had all of these conversations, you know, both around when Chappelle's 2020 Sticks and Stones special came out and also like ongoing with various folks. And it sounds like y'all felt like there was some progress and y'all felt heard, and then this came out. And so I'm wondering, you know, looking back on that, how has your perspective changed based on how you felt like at those times when you were having those conversations and now over what's kind of unfolded over the last month?
There are several things to it, right? Because it's been a kind of swirl of complicated emotions around this, because there was immediately when we found out about the special, and for most of us, we found out about the special like the day, I mean, technically, I think the day after it hit the service. We found out about it on the morning of the 6th that we really started digging into it. And there was absolutely like a sense of betrayal kind of at like the organizational level, because we know that there are so many allies throughout the content org who, you know, either they raised concerns about this, or, you know, they had been bringing us content to, you know, look at and participate in. And so we knew that those people were very genuine in their desire to work with our ERG and our community. But at the same time, you know, it felt like this got kind of fast-tracked, and it felt sort of like the processes that we had been trying to work on had been, you know, skipped in favor of, hey, we've got this thing and, you know, we already paid for it and we want to put it on the service because we know a lot of people are going to click on it. And, you know, that was very frustrating.
Yeah. So not only was it frustrating, it felt like a betrayal. You know, it really did feel like a betrayal. You know, so as in my capacity as an ERG lead, I got a message like a few days before saying a special was going to come out. And I was just like, okay, cool. Is this a typical special? Right? Because at this point, we know what Chappelle specials include. And they were like, yeah. It's typical, no big deal, blah, 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 blah. And then it came out and I was just like, this is not the typical special. This is like next level. Like this is so far beyond what I would have expected. And I'm surprised that no one thought more strategically about how to warn us about this. And so it felt like a betrayal, because at the very least, let's pretend no matter what, this special was going to come out, right? Like, let's pretend that that's the point. At the very least, it seemed like you could have done a better job of preparing us for what the special actually included and how it was going to potentially, you know, be received. Because I keep coming back to this idea of the ERG had always lent itself as to someone who could help, you know, again, maximize the content to make it less harmful and more palatable for people. Right. So there's so many ways we could have consulted and given suggestions that could have led to a much better experience. Because, you know, for instance, you know, a lot of people keep misattributing to the fact that the people asked for the special to come down to TransStar. But it was actually external people who asked for it to be taken down. And so if you think about that, if they had partnered with us, perhaps we could have been like, hey, by the way, if you do this, like small tweak, if you consider this small thing, in theory, you won't get nearly the amount of backlash that you're gonna get. And so it's just this idea of, you know, Netflix has this idea of, you know, dissent makes us better, right? You know, people disagreeing, you know, people like having the smartest people in the world, having them disagree, having them, you know, molding things into like this absolute like amazing product is what makes us successful. But then they completely bypassed doing that, right? They completely bypassed seeking out those partnerships. And I think that that's like, for me, it comes back to, so when it's certain types of content, when it's trans content, we don't follow the methodology and processes that make our company successful because we don't care. And so that's why it felt like a true betrayal to me.
Yeah. And one of the things that we had also worked on, and one of the things that we had talked about extensively when Sticks and Stones came out, was that giving us a chance as an ERG, a chance to digest the content ahead of when it hits the service, that also, it gives us a chance to have that anger reaction, and then gives us a chance internally to talk to each other, to say, hey, you know, here we can have a response to this. We can talk to people about this. We can, you know, see, you know, can a disclaimer be added? Can a content warning be added? Whatever. Can, you know, we somehow give parity to, you know, more positive trans content? What are our options here? But because we found out about it essentially the same time the public did, in terms of what was really in the special, my Twitter thread probably wouldn't have happened if I wasn't so damned angry at the fact that this had been dropped without even talking to us about it. When, if they had talked to us about it, like, we could have had time to process, to give feedback, to make the reaction better for, not just for the ERG, but for the community as a whole, to see if, you know, can we make changes? Can you frame things differently? Is there, you know, are there any options here that aren't the absolute worst option for the company in terms of its public image? We didn't get that chance. And so, you know, I'm from New Jersey. The anger does not take very long to get to that high bar. And, you know, that's how that Twitter thread happened.
As an Irish person, I can relate to the anger thing.
I'm also of Irish descent and from New Jersey. So I've got like two feeds of anger going in.
Oh, geez. Okay. Double dosing it. I want to kind of shift gears a little bit if we could. Each of you have, I guess the word, it's not the best word, but each of you have been sort of punished in a way for a lot of the things that have been going on, you know, over the last couple of weeks. Tara, you were suspended, and later the suspension was dropped, and B, obviously, you lost your job out of this. I want to ask, and this is a question for both of you, do you feel like you are punished for speaking out or organizing behind the scenes around this issue?
So it's difficult for me to say definitively anything, right? Like, it's hard for me to believe that the company that I was so sold on mm-hmm. could be this malicious, right? There's no question about that. I do find all the timing very strange. And if nothing else, I can say that there's no possible way in either one of our cases that they did a thorough enough investigation before they took action.
Hmm.
right? I could definitely say that. And I do think that there's a thoughtlessness and a carelessness there that is not indicative of the organization that I signed up for.
Was there any kind of due process around your dismissal?
No. So from what I understand, the article that they're accusing me of leaking information to came out the evening of October 13th. And by the evening of October 14th, I was terminated.
Okay.
So if you think about it from that perspective, I find it hard to believe that in 24 hours, you've definitively concluded that there's only one person who participated in this, first of all, and second of all, that that person was me. And so it's just, it's really difficult. It's really difficult for me to believe that they did a thorough job, especially when, by contrast, I think, Tara, your investigation that eventually cleared you was 3 days. So it took them 3 days to clear someone. So you would think that it would also take 3 days to convict someone. But Tara, you can elaborate.
You know, I think I posted the Twitter thread on, I think it might have been like a Wednesday. And then Thursday, I attended the QBR meeting, which I later learned I was not supposed to attend. You know, somebody gave me the link after I asked for it because I knew that the situation with the special was going to be discussed there because I had heard that from some of our allies in the ERG. And so, you know, I joined this meeting and I upvoted some of the questions in the Q&A list that they had. And I just listened, you know, because I was curious, like, as the co-VP of the ERG, I was very curious to find out, like, is there going to be an evolution of the language that the company is using to discuss this issue? Or are we going to hear the same song about creative freedom, but no mention of creative responsibility, which I think is, you know, the company's tenet is, you know, there's freedom and responsibility. But when it comes to content, a lot of the time it really feels like there's just freedom and very little responsibility. So that meeting was on, you know, like midday on a Thursday, I think. And then Friday evening, I got a message from someone in HR that said, hey, can you give me a call? This was at 6 p.m. So this is well after most people had stopped working. And it's funny because I looked at that message and I'm like, this feels like something I should not do. But I did it anyway because I was just too curious. And, you know, that's what I get. So I called the person and they said, hey, we found out that you attended QBR. Were you aware that it was, you know, restricted to directors and higher? And, you know, I said, no, I didn't realize that at all. And so, you know, they said, well, we're going to suspend you with pay while we investigate. And, you know, you'll hear from somebody next week. This was on a Friday before a holiday weekend because it was Indigenous Peoples Day on Monday. And I said, look, if you can suspend me on a Friday at 6 p.m., surely you can find somebody to do the investigation on a Friday at 6 p.m. But it wouldn't be until Monday that I would actually hear back from them. And, you know, can I say definitively that it was retaliatory? No, because I don't have access to, you know, all of the evidence that would be required to that. Is it hard for me to not see it that way? Yes, because, you know, I've spoke to a number of people at the company who have said, oh, wow, I can't believe that you were suspended for this. You know, I've attended that meeting in the past. I've spoke to people who weren't contacted, who attended that meeting and weren't invited to it. They actually clicked the same link that I did, and they were never contacted. So it's really hard to internalize that somehow if I hadn't spoken up, that they probably would have been a lot less curious about what I was doing. In terms of due process, like, in the end, I was exonerated, whatever word you want to use. I was cleared of any wrongdoing internally. But that was after you know, the company had gone to the media. There was a Variety article that kind of characterized me as, you know, sounding like I was some kind of, you know, radical trans activist kicking down a boardroom door, you know, barging into meetings and whatever, you know, impression it gave to people. But the reality was is you couldn't even participate in the meeting. It was just a stream. So it's not like I could even like click raise hand or something. Like, I just listened. And so I think part of due process, like, it's hard to say that there was due process when the very well-funded PR marketing arm of your multi-billion dollar employer, you know, kind of puts the targets on you. And as a result of that, like, you know, thankfully, there's an app called Block Party, which is incredibly helpful, that kind of filters out your Twitter mentions and lets other people handle sifting through them. If it wasn't for that, like, I was getting brigaded by, you know, a who's who of people who I don't very much respect their opinions, let's say.
Yeah. And I think I have to highlight that, because, you know, I was very fortunate, you know, in my role as an ERG lead, there are many situations that I participated in to support various members. And one of those is I came to Tara's reinstatement conversation. And the first thing that I brought up was, what is the company going to do in the future to ensure that they protect people in this situation? Right? Because it's not fair for Tara to have been accused of something like that, have that out there into the media, and then they didn't do anything to correct it. You know, it's not okay for that to happen. And it was really irresponsible as well.
Yeah. And one thing that they, you know, that they kind of said to me later was like, well, the reason why we, you know, usually we wouldn't, and I think B also has gotten some version of this line, normally we wouldn't comment in public on personnel matters, but, you know, in my case, when I got the notice that I was suspended, you know, considering everything else that was going on that week, I immediately in my head said, well, you know, this does not, on its face, this seems like it could be retaliatory to me. So having, you know, coming from a family of union folks and knowing that in this scenario, if they were trying to silence me, the number one thing that I should do at that point is be as loud as possible. And so I, you know, in our public ERG Slack channel, I said, hey, I've been suspended, you know, suspended with pay for attending this meeting. Please continue the work. And as a result of, I assume that, you know, it got out that I had been suspended, because I had never, you know, I didn't tell anybody outside the company, you know, other than family, that I had been suspended. And, you know, they had said, well, you know, once that happened, you know, you had kind of given up your privacy. And it's like, what should I have done? Because what happened and what it would look like if I was being retaliated against, whether or not they are the same, from my angle, it absolutely looks the same.
Yeah, I can kind of comment on this also, because Tara, you were going to be on our show last week originally, and I think we contacted you after your thread had gone viral, but before your suspension. And when you came back and said you couldn't do the show, you didn't mention why. You just said, something has come up, I cannot do the show now, right? And that's all you said. So I can kind of corroborate that you weren't going around telling a bunch of people about this. I don't know that I have a question here, but I just wanted to comment and add that I can kind of corroborate that as well.
It's funny, because I forgot about that. And yeah, you're absolutely right. That is exactly why I worded it that way. And that's why I said, okay, well, you know, and at that point, you know, I had immediately, you know, sought legal counsel, because I had no idea what was going to happen next, and I didn't know what my rights were, and I didn't know what I should do. And at that point, you know, I had to temper my desire to pretty much always be yelling about things that I think are wrong for a couple days. And yeah, that's why I wasn't able to do last weekend's show.
So one thing that I have been wondering about as we're kind of talking about all of this, like, I know that y'all have talked about, you know, a lot of the culture at Netflix and how y'all have worked with a lot of people that, like, you really trust and you really like. But also I'm wondering about how y'all are thinking about, you know, what leadership is saying in terms of, like, diversity and inclusion, and what y'all have seen unfold over the last month and how you're thinking about that.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting, because a few people have asked me about this now, and I do think it maybe I was a little bit naive, right? Because, you know, Netflix is better than any place I had ever been before. Like, there's no question about that. But just because some place is better than you've ever been before doesn't mean you haven't been abused and you're not being abused, right? And I think that that's one of the things that, you know, now that as I reflect upon that, I realize that in some parts of Netflix, there's no question that I was accepted fully and I could be exactly who I am. But I also think that when who I am became a problem, it was very easy for Netflix to say, you know, we can cut ties here. And I think that that's something that is a hard pill to swallow, especially as someone who had previously kind of been the face for Netflix on a lot of different issues, that maybe I had just not done my due diligence in understanding where my value would end. And so to a certain extent, I don't think that they are where they think they should be. And to be truthful, even as ERG lead for Blackhead and Transtar, I mean, there's some issues that I have helped navigate. I mean, even with Tara, you know, like Tara was really, really, you know, in a place where she was trying to figure out, like, does she want to stay at Netflix anymore? And I kind of intervened and helped her get connected with the right people to help her transfer to a better team. And that's the type of stuff I had to do all the time. And at the time, I was like, okay, it's okay. I'm doing this type of stuff because, you know, at least they're letting people have the opportunity to be successful. But why the heck did I have to say they're letting people have the opportunity to be successful? Why wasn't it just that every manager, director, VP, C-suite person knew how to treat people so that they could be successful? Like, I should not have ever had to be, as someone who was not paid more to be this ERG lead, to navigate these situations and make sure that there's safe spaces for people. I should never have had to do that. And I did it so much. And so it comes back to this idea just generally of companies, especially companies like Netflix, who swear up and down that inclusion is a key value for them, that they actually do what they say that they're going to do.
Yeah. And it's almost like dealing with two organizations or two companies at this point, right? So there's the, you know, ground level employees, the individual contributors or whatever you want to call it, the kind of rank and file. And then there's obviously layers of middle management. And then there's the leadership all the way at the top, the executive staff. And I feel like genuine support and empathy and care from a lot of the kind of rank and file and even kind of like the middle level management folks, like they really seem to understand. I got a lot of positive feedback from them. And then you have the kind of people at the top, and it feels like almost an entirely different reaction, which is a little frustrating because we've done so much. And, you know, one of the things I said kind of in anger when this thing dropped is like, you know, because people were very ready to be like, oh, it's time for, you know, I guess we need even more education. And it's like, no, I am sorry. But like at this point, like this is summer school. Like we have spent so much time educating. We've done so much emotional labor. But still, you know, this is kind of the response we get. It's hard to get the response that we did from leadership and feel like that we're not, in addition to fighting kind of external influences and opinions, but that we're not having to fight for ourselves internally. And also, like, you know, I love doing the work. I love making it a better workplace for trans people. But at the same time, like, I was hired to be an engineer. When I signed the paperwork, it was to be an engineer. And sitting in the room with, you know, millionaires and billionaires trying to desperately impress a sense of empathy upon them, like, why? I don't know. It's frustrating that that's something that we have to do. And then last, in terms of like the actual reaction, like, you know, it feels like on some level, there's a make things better and make things worse button. And it feels like every time they've just been slamming the make things worse button. Even like there was an apology, right? You know, by our co-CEO, and I would put quote apology in quotation fingers. There's a book by Susan Shapiro that's called The Forgiveness Tour, How to Find the Perfect Apology. And I was joking the other day that, like, at, you know, as a group, we should just gift copies of that to leadership, because like the apology that we got, like, we're all trans, we've all had to deal with our family, and we've all gotten the non-apology apologies. And that was a non-apology apology. That's just frustrating, because at the level at which this company, you know, operates, and at the level at which You know, we're supposed to be surrounded by, you know, stunning colleagues who are the best at their field. And it's like, is this response really a collective group of the best people at PR, marketing, and everything else was able to come up with? Because that is shocking if that was the best that they were able to do.
You know, it's so funny that you mentioned the PR part of this. Some people have been like, B, like, I've seen your name everywhere. And I was just like, yeah. And they were like, how did you do that so quickly? And I was like, I have spent 15 years cultivating relationships. You know, I went to Northwestern University, go Wildcats, that has one of the best journalism schools in the entire country. And when this happened to me, all I did was reach out and say, hey, could you help me? And that's the thing about this, is that kindness and generosity leads to people wanting to help you. And that's the message that Transtar was putting out there. It's like, we just want you to be kind. We just want you to be thoughtful. And, you know, if nothing else, what this is, I hope that they're learning from this, is that thoughtfulness leads to people wanting to support your cause. And right now, Netflix continues to stumble because they're not being thoughtful. You know, to the point of Ted's, you know, like interviews that he did where he said, you know, things like, I messed up. He also in the same breath said that because people have been working from home, they forgot how nice we are. And I was just like, well, but we're talking about the library of content. I can look at the library of content that Netflix has on my TV every single day. That does not tell me that there's trans content that is parody and content that tells the complete story. This isn't about a bunch of one percenters, right? Because people are like, you're spoiled brats, you get paid a lot of money. You know, I don't know, like Tara and I both can tell you, we were poor as hell. You know, I was in a situation when growing up, teachers did not even try to call my home because they knew the telephone wasn't going to be on. They didn't send notes home through the mail because they knew that they didn't know what my address was because we didn't have an address. I remember when my wife and I were, we celebrated like crazy when we bought our house, and I cried because it was the first time I had a permanent address. It was the first time that I knew that I was going to have stability in my life. We're not spoiled brats. We are not people who don't understand how fortunate we are that we get paid a decent salary to do work that we love. In fact, we are grateful every single solitary day that we have that experience. And all we want to do is help other people have that experience. And because we have that experience, because we are empowered, we are people who have done that work to become whole. And all we want to do is make sure that the companies that we work for aren't tearing down people like us. Right? Because we were able to get here and we want every other person to get to the same place that we are in life.
Exactly. And I talk a lot about like putting the ladder down behind me, right? Like at the end of the day, I'm a white woman, right? Like nobody gets to check a box saying how awesome they are because they hired me, because I was 35 before I transitioned and I was already a senior engineer. Show me the senior engineer who transitioned, you know, early in their career, or maybe even before their career started, who's made it all the way up through the industry to this level, and it's hard to find them. Show me the Black trans woman engineer that made it all the way up through this. You can't, because there's none in the room, at least at my workplace. And so, you know, that has been a big focus, is to make sure that we are building these opportunities so that even within our community, that, you know, every variation of person within our community, because our community, despite what Chappelle said about, you know, queerness only being a white thing, you know, our community is as diverse as humanity is. And I want all of those stories to be there.
So one thing I'm curious about is, you know, obviously our podcast, we do a lot of analysis around, you know, quote unquote, cancel culture. That's sort of our big thing. So I'd be remiss if I didn't kind of go there with you two. But I guess my first question is, do you all want Dave Chappelle to be canceled?
I just want to say ahead of time, just right here, the only person who in this entire thing that's been canceled is B.
Well, I was going to get to that in a second.
Yeah. So first and foremost, so I am a Black person. Like I got to say again, I'm a Black person. I'm trans. I'm Southern. There's something that we always say Well, there's two things we always say where I'm from. You don't mess with nobody's money and you don't mess with nobody's car, right? These are two things that you do not do. So based on those rules that are facets of my life, I don't want Dave Chappelle to be canceled, right? That's not the point here. You know, I honestly, sincerely believe many people who have met him, who have said things like he's a very nice person, he has no ill intent. I actually lean into that theory because that's the hopeful part of me. And so what I would like him to do is educate himself. You know, I would love for him to meet people like me, understand that we exist so that he can understand the nuance of the argument that he was making actually is wrong. Because this isn't the LGBTQ plus or gay or, you know, the white gay people as he identified this versus the Black civil rights movement. Because there's a bunch of us who fit into both of those categories. And we would like him to sharpen his argument because perhaps if he did, we would actually laugh, right? He has so many illogical fallacies in his argument that are just not right. And he would do well to learn more. And like, you know, I'm here for it. You know, I posted yesterday after he announced that, you know, he would meet with the Netflix employees. I will help coordinate that. I don't know the information of his people, right? If anyone wanted to reach out to me, I don't even have to be in the room. I would just connect him with the Netflix employees so he can have that conversation. Because this is what this is about. It's about education. You know, it's about educating people, making them our allies, not about destroying them or denigrating their work. Because, you know, Dave Chappelle has earned a lot of cred for being in the business for 20 plus years. And I just think that he could do a better job in the next 20 years that he's out there than what he's doing right now.
Yeah, we as an ERG have not asked for this to be taken down for a number of reasons, right? Like, first of all, if you take this thing down, you run the risk of it becoming even more popular, right? Because now it's taboo, right? Now it's something that, you know, ooh, I'm not supposed to watch this thing, so I'm going to want to watch it, right? So none of us think that that's a good idea. We also just don't think it's a likely outcome given the way, you know, the environment at the company is. But that said, like, there is a opportunity here to, one, like, we put content warnings in front of other things. You know, if there was, you know, rampant homophobia to the level that there was transphobia, would this have gotten it? Are there other things on the service that have, you know, similar levels of hate or towards marginalized groups that already have content warnings? I don't know, probably, but it feels like that's a really low bar to say, like, hey, this is one man's opinion on several marginalized communities. And if you want to learn more about Jewish people, about trans people, about any of these groups, you know, here are some additional resources that are available. And, you know, I have no desire to cancel Dave. Like, I, you know, was 846 perfect? No, but 846 was the best thing he's done in almost two decades. It was incredible. Like, you know, even after Sticks and Stones, watching 846, I was like whooping at my TV. Like, that was what I wanted to see, because that was punching up. And so I have no desire to cancel, especially because, like, somebody like Dave, if he is, you know, more informed on the reality of trans experiences and trans lives, and, you know, maybe gets a little history lesson on queerness and how, you know, the queer movement and the, you know, movement for racial justice have always been intertwined in this country. Like, you know, whether you think that it was Sylvia Rivera or Martha P. Johnson that was the first person to throw something at the Stonewall riots, it doesn't matter, because either way, it wasn't a white person that did that. And that is inextricably linked to the history of our community. And, you know, I think that this is just, you know, it's, you know, maybe Dave doesn't have, you know, like so many people in positions of power, maybe there aren't enough people around Dave saying, like, listen, I love you, but you really got this wrong.
I think one of the things that I'm most frustrated with in all of this, and this has sort of been my standard response to the trolls that have been in my own Twitter mentions, is I want people to go watch Disclosure Doc, right? Which is, ironically enough, hosted at Netflix. because I think that documentary did such a great job of explaining how things like Dave's show can be harmful, right?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, there's been a conversation around that the whole time. And this is kind of where my, you know, my Twitter thread came from, and the offense versus impact memo that I wrote, is that at this point in understanding media, I don't know how it's possible to be in leadership at a major media company and not understand the ways in which content affects people's perception. Like, we know, like, if we didn't think that content affected people's perception, then why would we care whether there is smoking in our original shows or not, right? Why would we put a content warning on it if we didn't think that there was a chance that watching somebody smoking would cause someone to say, hey, maybe I will do that. And you know, that is known and has been known for a long time. So, you know, when we say that this causes harm, you know, the answer that we seem to get back is, well, we don't think that there is a direct link between Dave's special and violence against trans people. It's like, none of us have been saying that somebody goes out and watches Chappelle's show and it's like, wow, I'm going to go beat up a trans person. But it's the culture that this creates, where we are, you know, we are objects of ridicule, where we are less than human, in particular, where attraction to trans women is embarrassing to men. That is the environment that leads to violence and harm against trans people. So, you know, saying that there's not a direct relationship, nobody said that there is. It's more complicated than that.
Well, and I think the other thing that I think is interesting about that, so one, why do we have different rating categories if content does not matter, if anyone can watch any type of content? You know, you have PG, you have PG-13, you have rated R, you have NC-17. Like, literally, we say from in the United States, also in other countries, the ratings barometers, the different categories are even more strict than they are in the United States, to be clear. And that you literally cannot watch certain types of content if you're not old enough. So we know that content has some kind of effect on people. Secondly, why does Netflix exist if not for that, right? Like, why wouldn't, like, there's no point in creating content at all if you're saying that content that gets created does not have an impact on society, right? Like, that means that there would be no point in any show, that any movie, any documentary that has ever been created. So again, it goes to the thoughtlessness of this response, right? It goes to the fact that people had not really thought through what is the point of Netflix to exist if not to impact how people perceive the world, right? And it gets very frustrating, right? Because, like, I expect more. I expect more from people who run a $200 billion company than to be this thoughtless in every aspect of how they operate on a day-to-day basis. And I think the last point here is to the point that has been made a few times, that content will be offensive. I agree. There will be content that could be offensive to anyone. My dad is a Baptist minister. He doesn't like to see curse words or sex or anything like that on TV. So, of course, he would, you know, have a problem with different things. I couldn't watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer, okay? So, like, I know that there's content that people will find offensive. But, again, it's about showing different types of content. I was asked the other day of this concept of, well, you can just press stop. I'm like, yeah, I can just press stop. And I totally agree with that. But if I press stop on all of the shows, what the heck am I supposed to watch? And this is why you have to have diversity in content. Because I still want to watch something. Like, should I not have anything to watch because all of these shows provide hateful context to my life experience? No, that's not fair. All we're asking Netflix to do is to invest in a wide swath of content, and specifically trans content, because we want to show stories that are trans stories as well.
Yeah. And Caitlin, you mentioned specifically disclosure. And I think disclosure is a great example of this, right? Because, you know, we frequently hear, well, we have so much great trans content on the service, but what are we promoting? What are we paying for? And what are people actually watching? You know, I don't want to say that we should, you know, somehow alter the recommendations algorithm or something so that no matter what, it just always shows you trans content. Like, that's not what we're asking for. But But if you're going to put something like the closer, you know, on the billboard as soon as you open the app, and you're going to see Dave's head there, like, why, where's my billboard, you know, for Trans Day of Visibility or Trans Day of Remembrance? Where's our billboard for disclosure for every member of the service? There isn't one, right? And so having the content, if we aren't paying trans creators like we do cis creators, and if we aren't promoting that content to people outside, like the people for whom disclosure is most valuable in terms of its influence and its impact on people, is people who aren't trans. Trans people already know about all this, but what we need is for broader audiences to be looking at that, and just having it sitting there and paying, you know, whatever. I think Sam Fetter had said that, you know, they'd gotten it for a heavy discount. Like, if you want this content to actually be impactful, instead of just paying lip service to how great the trans content is, you need to make sure that a broader audience sees it, and you need to pay queer and trans creators so that they can then go on to make more content. Because at the end of the day, if you offer somebody a pittance for their trans content, it's going to be really hard for that person to continue to make queer and trans content.
Wanted to check in about if there are kind of any broad topics or things that y'all wanted to talk about that we haven't touched on yet.
Yeah, I want to talk about the intersectionality piece of this, right? You know, it's so hard for me as a Black trans person. Like, I can't sit back and not talk about how frustrating it is to continually have Black trans people be erased from this conversation. You know, on National Day of Remembrance on November 20th, the list is up to 44 people who have been killed who are trans this year. And the majority of those people are Black and trans. And I was actually just having a conversation with my cousin, because my cousin watched a special and he's normally a huge Chappelle fan. And he mentioned, he was like, I didn't enjoy it as much. And I was like, oh, I wonder why. And he was like, well, because I was thinking of you. He was like, I didn't see you. I didn't understand how this related to you. And I was like, oh my gosh, you've just had that same breakthrough that so many people have. You understand that I'm a human and I deserve to be acknowledged and to exist. And I started explaining to him that that list always feels incomplete to me on National Day of Remembrance, because it's only the people who had someone who could tell their story, who had someone who fought to make sure that they knew that that person was a Black person, that they were a trans person, that they wanted to be identified in that way. You know, again, we talk about, you know, Tara and I are privileged people. I was able to legally change my name and legally change my gender. So no one can erase who I am. Like, it's documented evidence that I'm a proud Black trans person, and that you cannot change who I am simply because you don't like it. You know, if I didn't have those means, it would just be based on whether my community had the ability to get my story out there. And that's the harm that these types of pieces of content puts out there. Because they try to make this juxtaposition a white thing versus Black thing, or a gay thing versus non-gay thing. But it's not, because there's so many people who intersect at those different margins. And we get hate from all those different groups. I remember last year when Juneteenth was really being promoted as, you know, we should have that, this is a holiday, there were a lot of, you know, white gay people who are like, June is our month. You can't possibly take, you know, one of our days from our month to celebrate. And I was like, honey, Juneteenth existed before before the LGBTQ rights movement, first of all. And secondly, June is my month and Juneteenth is my day, because I am both identities. You don't get to tell other people who they are. Like, let them tell their own stories. And that's the disservice here. And this is goes back to, how do we, you know, let's take a step back and educate ourselves. Because it's completely ridiculous that in 2021, we're having this same exact oppression Olympics conversation. And it's the exact conversation that people put in place to keep diverse and minority people from coming together and asking for what we deserve, which is equality and equity.
Absolutely. B, you're about to have a kid, and that's one thing that to me just seems especially cruel about how you were let go and what happened. But I'm wondering, you know, how you're grappling with all of that, and also about what you hope to pass on to your kid by standing up and speaking out against all of this.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something I didn't expect. But, you know, the good thing about being a product manager my entire life is that I've been planning for the worst case scenarios for a long time. So, you know, fortunately, we know that we'll be okay, right? We saved money. Hopefully also we can come to a reasonable solution with Netflix for a severance. And then I'll be able to have this child and have time to bond and recover before I have to look for work. And also I should say, you know, again, I've spent 15 years creating goodwill, doing great work for my community, doing great work in tech. And so many people have already raised their hand and said, so what do you want to do next? You know, we got you. So like, I don't have any doubt that I'm going to do great work somewhere after this is all said and done. So that part isn't the nerve-wracking part. It actually really is. How many diapers do I really need? Like that part, like I don't know how many diapers. I'm like, which butt paste? Because apparently butt paste is a whole thing, and there's like 15,000 different butt pastes that you have to look at. That stuff is super confusing to me. I just bought like a few different ones. I was like, who knows which one's going to be the right one? So that stuff is like that's the truly scary part about all of this. And then what I want my child to think about. So my mother, and it's something that comes up constantly. Like every single day I wake up and I think about my mother. So my mother unfortunately died in 2012 and I was still relatively young. And every single day I get up and I think, what would my mother think of what I did today? And when I think about my child, I would hope that he knows that he's from a long line of amazing humans who fight for people, who create kindness in this world, who create opportunities for people in this world. And that it didn't start with me. I'm just the latest iteration of this. But that this is who we are. This is our DNA. And that he would internalize that message and that he becomes that person too. And so even when I'm long gone, he will wake up every day just like I do and think, am I still holding those values to be true? Because that is exactly who our family is.
That's beautiful.
So there's something that, you know, I've been dealing with, you know, since B went public with their termination. And that is this, you know, especially within the company, within the people I'm talking to about, you know, my situation, there seems to be a lack of understanding, like, well, we think that B did this, you know, terrible thing that is such a credible violation of, you know, the company's, you know, ideals and rules and whatever. And they seem to be trying to encourage me to kind of separate from B in terms of like full-throated supporting B. And they don't seem to understand why. And I think it's because, you know, these are entirely cis people and they don't understand the power and just like the investment and that there is in like a trans person who is carrying a child and is going to have and raise a child in an affirming environment and, you know, that is going to have that child thrive. Like, I'm never going to have my own kid, right? And so looking at somebody within our community who is, you know, who is pregnant and who is, you know, put in danger as a result of decisions that are being made, like, I don't know how I could do anything else. Because, you know, there's a movie, Children of Men, where there's basically like a, you know, there's like a plague where, you know, women can't have babies anymore and they haven't been able to for like 20 years. And then you see like the one, you know, somebody has a kid and it's, everybody's just like stunned by it. And like, that's what I feel like when I see a trans person having a kid. It's like, oh my God, this is, you know, our community directly being able to thrive and, you know, to have their family. How could I ever not support that? And I just don't think that cis people can understand that perspective of like, this is so important and this is such a beautiful thing and a precious thing. Like, of course I will defend it and I will stand by B, because like, I don't know, it's not exactly a revolutionary act, but it is in terms of what society expects from us. Like, that is worth so much more to me than almost anything else, because so many of us don't get to do this thing.
Yeah. I mean, it all comes back to hope, right? Because, like, for instance, I never thought that I would have a child, because economically it's very difficult to have children. And so, you know, it goes back to that idea that for so many of us who are Netflix trans star, we are legitimately, we're like the top 0.1% of the trans community, right? In terms of, you know, power, economic power, you know, psychologically being in a great place. And I think that's why we're fighting so hard. Because all of us know what it took for us to get here. And we also, like, so disproportionately, I think, in the TransStar group compared to the rest of society, I don't know a single one member of the TransStar community who isn't giving back in some way. Many of the TransStar, many of our TransStar colleagues actually pay people's rent every month. They pay for people's hormones every month. You know, my wife and I, we have a scholarship for LGBTQ plus, what, Black LGBTQ plus students at Northwestern University. You know, we support Howard Brown Health in Chicago, which is the largest kind of trans provider of care in the Midwest. And everyone from the Midwest comes there. We give so much, because we realize how endangered this community is. And that's why, you know, again, the conversation is that we have had enough, right? Like, we know what you're doing to this community, and we're fighting for this community, and we're not going to stop fighting, because it's absolutely imperative that we save every single trans life that we can. And it starts with making sure content is not hurtful.
B, Tara, thank you so much for joining us and being so generous with your time and sharing about what's going on. It's been a really important conversation to have, and we really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it was really great. Thank you.
So, Caitlin, are you ready for some out-of-context cancellations?
Always. You know I'm born and ready for this segment.
So, one of our listeners wanted us to cancel centrist Democrats.
I can't imagine why.
No, they're so great, aren't they? So great.
Is that sarcasm I detect in your voice?
No, not at all. Not from me.
Couldn't be me. Our next out-of-context cancellation is Instagram constantly showing ads for brands without inclusive sizing. And I think by extension, brands without inclusive sizing to begin with.
Fuck that.
Yeah, it's just annoying because, I mean, I get this. I've gained quite a bit of weight through the pandemic. And I'll see ads at places that I used to shop. And I'm like, oh, that's cute. And I'll click on it. And it's just not available in my size. It's like, thanks, bro. Feels bad, man.
And it's not only like a moral thing that they should do, but it's also like a capitalist, like it makes them more right. money. So, like, why would you do it?
It doesn't make any sense.
Also, so I have been struggling with a sinus infection destroyed. Like, I've been like snoring horribly and just like not being able to breathe through my nose. And so I would love to cancel some sinus infections because they're not a good time.
Yeah, let's do it. I've had sinus infections before and they're just the worst.
Bad news. Nix it. Goodbye. All of them are gone. If you are struggling with a sinus infection, you aren't anymore because we've taken care of it. We're not medical professionals though. So like, don't legally hold us to that.
Let's see your doctor. Legal disclaimer. And then lastly, an issue near and dear to my heart, or not. We're canceling depression. I've said it. It's time to go.
No, I am on board with that. Not a fun time. Don't need it. Let's get rid of it.
So I started my first antidepressant the other day, and I had to stop it because it gave me hives.
No.
Yeah, like horrible hives all over my body. It was miserable.
Well, I am sorry about that. You're going to get it on another one and you'll find one that's a good fit for you, but that's not a fun adventure to go on.
No. And I've never been allergic to a medication before, so it surprised the hell out of me. Mm.
Well, yeah. Knock on wood, hopefully the next one will be a better experience.
I hope so too.
And then if you want us to cancel something, you can become a Patreon of our show and join our Discord for $5 a month. And then you can let us know what you want us to cancel. We also have some other rewards for our members, and support helps us become a weekly show, which is our goal.
You can join our Discord and learn about other perks at patreon.com/cancelmedaddy.
Today's show was made by me, Olive Rash Klein, and my incredible co-host, Caitlin Burns.
Daniel Peterschmidt made our theme song, and Ian MW designed our graphics.
Our show is made possible by the incredible cancelers supporting our work, especially the members of our Canceler Hall of Fame, with the great power to cancel all of their enemies, Meg and Alice.
We appreciate your support.
Happy canceling!